I'm proud to be a Jew, but that's way too Jewish for me.
Shalom, and welcome to the Two Jewish Radio Show with Rabbi Sam Kohan and friends, a weekly serving of everything Jewish. We'll have a great hour together of news, music, comedy, and conversation. Our guest this morning on Two Jewish is Rabbi Rami Shapiro, author of many books on Jewish mysticism and Kabbalah, on his new book of poems, Accidental Grace. We'll also have visits from our Two Jewish expert on the international scene, Tom Price, our Maven on Israel, Oshrat Barel, and our new Maven on Jewish education, John Ben Asher. Please email your comments to us at twojewishradio18@gmail.com or visit us on the web at twojewishradio.com. And now, here's Rabbi Sam Kohan and Two Jewish.
Shalom. It's Thanksgiving weekend, the close of 4 days of family overeating and induced shopping cultivated by alleged deals of all kinds. But the purpose of this weekend is supposed to be gratitude to God. In case you forgot, between all the football on TV, the sales, and the leftover turkey sandwiches. Anyway, we are now officially in what Americans call the holiday season, the period between Thanksgiving and New Year's, when life focuses more on family and festivals and less on the things we spend so much of our time on regularly, like work and other ordinary duties. As Jews, we are perhaps more accustomed to living in holiday seasons than most other people, since we actually have lots more holidays than other Americans do. In fact, the busiest holiday season for us comes in September and bleeds into October, from Rosh Hashanah through Simchat Torah, a month during which fully 14 days out of 30 are actual holidays in one way or another. So this November-December season is not really such a crazy time for us. I mean, Hanukkah is just, as Adam Sandler put it, 8 crazy nights. On the other hand, perhaps some Jewish wisdom on surviving and enjoying the holidays would come in handy for all of you out there who have just about had it with online flash specials, catalogs, Black Fridays, traffic, gift buying, deliveries, mailing services, decorations, holiday muzak, and the other trappings of the American retail end-of-the-year orgy of sales, spending, and, of course, advertising. Look, in truth, this period of time has only just begun. The only thing that takes longer to complete than the American November-December holidays is the college football bowl season. So if we here on Two Jewish can make this time of year a little easier for you, well, we will gain at least a few extra mitzvah points. To prepare you for this festive marathon, here are the top 5 things to remember to help you through the holidays. Number 5, the real purpose of holidays, Hanukkah, Christmas, New Year's, Kwanzaa, Advent, you name it, has nothing to do with purchasing anything for anyone. God doesn't care if you buy expensive presents for your spouse, child, secretary, or mailman. God cares if you connect with the people you love in good and meaningful ways. Number 4, nothing you buy ever saves you money. That's true, even if it's 50% off, or on a flash deal, or a Groupon, or who knows. Number 4, nothing you buy ever saves you money. That's true, even if it's 50% off, or on a flash deal, or Groupon. Everything you buy costs you money. That's why you pay them, and they don't pay you. Number 3. You shouldn't spend more time and effort on what you buy for somebody than you do actually talking to them. Number 2. Decorations look nice within reason. You are not putting on a Broadway show in your home, and you will eventually have to clean it all up and put it all away. Exercise a little seichel. Limit your shtick. And number 1. The best way to show love for somebody is not by writing a check. Unless, of course, it's made out to the Two Jewish Radio Show and mailed care of me, Rabbi Sam Kohan. Well, then it's a very good way to show love. Those are the 5 top 2 Jewish recommendations for surviving and enjoying the holiday season. As part of our pre-Hanukkah musical preview today to play us in this morning, here's the Maccabees' latest Hanukkah parody. It's an a cappella version of the song Shut Up and Dance called Latke Recipe.
Tonight is Hanukkah, got everything we need.
was the Maccabees parody Latke recipe for the coming Festival of Hanukkah. It begins a week from tonight for 8 great nights of candles, joy, and latkes. By the way, I do think the parody I wrote for that song has better lyrics. And you can hear it if you're in Tucson 2 weeks from now at Temple Emmanuel at our greatest Hanukkah on Earth, Sunday, December 13th at 4:30 p.m. I'm just saying. When we come back in a few moments, we'll meet Rabbi Rami Shapiro, one of the most original writers and thinkers on the subject of Jewish mysticism and a favorite guest of Too Jewish. We'll discuss his new book of poems, Accidental Grace, his first collection of poetry ever. Find out why he switched to this new form when we return in a few moments on Too Jewish.
Are you or a loved one facing a terminal illness? Casa de la Luz Hospice offers patients and loved ones the support necessary to face the final months of life. Paid for by Medicare and most private insurances, hospice team members provide medical, emotional, and spiritual care in the security and comfort of the patient's home. Casa de la Luz has been a leading provider of hospice care in Tucson since 1998, and today serves more patients in Pima County than any other local hospice provider. The mission of Casa de la Luz Hospice is to provide superior care to patients and their loved ones so that they may complete their mission on this earth in comfort, dignity, and harmony. Call 544-9890 to learn more about how Casa de la Luz Hospice can help you. That's 544-9890. Casa de la Luz Hospice, because every day counts.
Hi, I'm Ben, a student at Tucson Hebrew Academy. Attention Arizona taxpayers, you can provide Jewish education to families at no cost to you. Direct your Arizona state tax dollars to JETCO, the Jewish Education Tax Credit Organization, and help make great Jewish education affordable. Here's how it works. Arizona lets taxpayers receive a dollar-for-dollar tax credit for payments made to JETCO. JETCO gives scholarships to kids who attend private schools like Anshe Israel's Kindergarten and Tucson Hebrew Academy, serving students from K through 8. Tax credits are different from a tax deduction. When you give to JETCO, you get a 100% tax credit. That means your Arizona state income tax is reduced by the exact amount you've given. You can give up to $1,067 for a single filer and $2,134 for a married couple. You get that whole amount back from your state income tax. Give JETCO a call at 647-8442. That's 647-8442, or go to JETCO.org. You can even choose a future date to process your payment. How cool is that? Make a tax credit contribution to JETCO and build Jewish identity in Tucson for generations of students. And it won't cost you a dime.
We are delighted to welcome to Too Jewish our guest this morning. Rabbi Rami Shapiro is one of the most interesting and unusual figures in the Jewish world, a scholar of mysticism who came into his Jewish mysticism by means of a turn from a Buddhist interest. He has a new book out. Unlike some of his many others, it's a book of poetry called Accidental Grace, a beautiful and interesting text. Good morning and welcome, Rami.
Good morning.
So, when did you decide you were a poet?
Well, I still haven't decided. But the first time I got called a poet, and I write about this briefly in the introduction to the book.
You do.
Is there was this guy, Rabbi Ruvain. I don't remember his last name. I was living in Israel in the 69-70, and I found this guy. He was a crazy Kabbalist who wanted to create some kind of Kabbalistic kibbutz, and he needed people to come a few days before Shabbat and dig holes and whatever he needed done on the farmland, and then spend Shabbat with him. And I used to go as often as possible, and then one of these Shabbaton events that he was holding, he introduced me as a poet and said that I was going to read poetry after Shabbat was over. And that was news to me. It was news to me that I was a poet. It was news to me that I was going to read poetry. But I guess not so new that I didn't actually have some in my knapsack. So.
Clearly, you were getting ready to be a poet if you had the poetry with you.
Right.
You have written extensively about the personal experience of the mystical, and you somehow make it very practical. Your poetry captures some of this, but I think in a very elegant way. How different is it writing poetry to writing prose for you?
No, it's very different. I'm a prose writer. I mean, I've written over 30 books. Only one of them is a book of poetry. The poetry came out of, and I spent 20 years as a congregational rabbi trying to wrestle with the liturgy that, the conventional liturgy we were using, finding it really distasteful, very annoying, finding myself arguing with it all the time. So the poetry started as an attempt to rewrite the liturgy. I mean, a lot of my books, I rewrite texts from the Bible. And the idea is, had God chosen me instead of Moses, what would Torah sound like? Well, how would the Siddur sound if I was the one who wrote it? So, it's a little chutzpah there, but that's sort of what motivates me to do this.
If there wasn't chutzpah, there wouldn't be writers, I think.
Yeah, exactly.
We will talk much more extensively with Rabbi Rami Shapiro when we come back in a few moments here on Too Jewish. We welcome David and Pam of Freedom Smoke. We started talking last week about Freedom Smoke, the smokeless product, no tobacco, to get people off of cigarettes. What are the health advantages to using your product as opposed to smoking?
Thank you, Rabbi Kohan. We have a lot of physicians here in town, from neurologists to ophthalmologists, cardiologists, pulmonologists, sending patients to us because of damaging effects from emphysema, everything of the like that comes from smoking cancerous cigarettes.
And Freedom Smoke International provides all kinds of flavors, pleasurable experience, but not the same health risk.
That's right. You have the same experience as smoking. You have the hand-to-mouth, the mantra of the In-N-Out, as well as vapors compared to cigarette smoke. So there's no secondhand smoke either.
How can people find your product?
They can find us through freedomsmokeusa.com. Our toll-free number, which is here in Tucson, is 800-705-7013.
And then go into a store.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. We have 3 stores. We're opening a 4th in the next couple of months here in town.
We will talk more next week. Thank you, guys.
Thank you.
Thank you.
If you have a question, comment, compliment, or criticism, a kvetch or a kvel, please email us at twojewishradio18@gmail.com, TOOJewishRadio18@gmail.com. Or visit our website at twojewishradio.com. You can hear all past and present shows by streaming them from the website or download them at the Apple iTunes Store's very popular Jewish podcasts. You know, it's slightly hard to believe that Hanukkah is coming up so soon, but with Thanksgiving done now, it's the next holiday of consequence on the ritual radar beginning a week from tonight. We'll feature Hanukkah music each week. Building up to the Festival of Lights, Hanukkah starts December 6th. My own temple's huge celebration, the greatest Hanukkah on earth at Temple Emmanuel, is just 2 weeks away, December 13th at 4:30 p.m., free and open to all. So let's get in the mood. Here's a lovely Hanukkah melody from the Sephardic artist Flori Jagoda of Yugoslavia, back when there was a Yugoslavia. It's in Ladino, the language of the Jews of Spain, a mixture of Hebrew and Spanish, and called Ocho Candelicas, 8 nights of Hanukkah, matchmaking parties each night, singing, dancing, and little almond cakes. It's by the group, The Voice of the Turtle.
Hanukkah linda está aquí, ocho candelas para mí. Hanukkah linda está aquí, ocho candelas para mí. Oh. Candelica, 2 candelicas, 3 candelicas, 4 candelicas, 5 candelicas, 6 candelicas, 7 candelicas, 8 candelas para mí.
Muchas fiestas voy a hacer, con alegría y placer. Muchas fiestas voy a hacer, con alegría y placer.
Candelicas, 2 candelicas, 3 candelicas, 4 candelicas, 5 candelicas, 6 candelicas, 7 candelicas, 8 candelas para mí.
Los pastelicos voy a comer con almendricas y la miel. Los pastelicos voy a comer con almendricas y la miel.
Candelica, 2 candelicas, 3 candelicas, 4 candelicas, 5 candelicas, 6 candelicas, 7 candelicas, 8 candelas para mí.
Ocho Candelicas, Eight Nights of Hanukkah from the Voice of the Turtle for the coming Festival of Lights and Religious Freedom. We welcome our Mivi non-Israel Oshrat Barel, head of the Wine Tribe Israel Center. Boker Tov, Oshrat.
Boker Tov, Rabbi.
We started talking about the housing challenge in Israel. You could almost call it a housing crisis. It really is a crisis for younger people trying to buy housing. But a lot of the economic protests we've seen over the last few years, nonviolent to be sure, but huge in Israel, have come because of food products, in particular dairy products. So let's try to explain why cottage cheese could become the heart of a revolution in Israel, which Americans really don't understand.
Because it's basic, you know, it's the idea is to emphasize, it's like if it's madan, if it's like how do you call madan chalav, like the milky, which is like a chocolate fudge,
yeah,
which is even
milky
cottage.
Is kind of like chocolate pudding,
yeah,
it tastes
yeah.
better, but it's
so
basically chocolate pudding.
The idea is really a basic product, not like lechem, bread and milk, but you know,
but just a little bit
a
above it.
Bit.
Every kid in
yeah.
Israel has
not
had
a steak,
it, likes it.
Right. Not even, you know,
it's not even a fancy
organic chicken,
right.
but something like cheese that you can put on the bread that you were able to buy. And that's the kind of a protest that's like family. And again, it was not the poor people that went out to the street.
It was middle class.
It was middle class. And if middle class cannot buy like very basic stuff, it's a very problematic. And in the last election, the main issue wasn't Iran deal or Hamas or ISIS. It was like, we cannot live here anymore. That was the issue.
Too
of course
expensive
now, of
to
course
manage.
Now we are, you know, the priorities changed again.
Of course.
But as soon as, you know, everything will be quiet again. So I will assure, like, I feel that it will be another protest.
So one of the interesting aspects of the Israeli economy, thinking long term, is it was a very socialized economy, one of the most socialized in the world, even at a time when there was the Soviet bloc. You know, most of the Israeli economy was controlled by the government.
Mm-hmm.
Much of that's been privatized.
Mm-hmm.
That's helped Israel become a very dynamic, fast-growing economy, never really went through a terrible recession. But it's made it really expensive. Israel has some of the most expensive hotel rooms. It has some of the most expensive housing. Partly a lot of people in a small place.
Mm-hmm.
But Israelis are not feeling that joy from the successful economy has spread through the whole economy very well.
Nachon, and I felt it very much during the summer when I went to Israel. And I told Eli, you know, it's the same to go to the restaurant in United States and in Israel. It's cost the same. But
it
in
does.
United States, you just paid like four times more. So, no, really.
You mean in Israel, you paid four times more?
No, you paid like the salary here.
Oh, you paid. Your income is four times as much.
Your income is four times as much. So you pay the same, but
right.
you get less.
Right.
So your koach kniyah, like, I don't know how to
cost say, of living or
yeah the power that you do you have with
your
money
purchasing power
that's exactly the word I was looking for is less.
It's a fraction. Yeah. It's fascinating because Israel is very modern, very contemporary, all kinds of conveniences, lots of fantastic restaurants everywhere, if only Israelis could afford them.
Some of them can afford them, you know, there is a lot of new Novorishim.
Novorishim. Oh, that's a new term for me. It's a combination of French and Hebrew used in English.
New rich
well,
people.
Well, maybe we'll explore some of that next time. Thanks so much, Ashraf.
Thank you, Rabbi.
When you're looking to buy or sell your home, you probably want Tucson's best realtor on your side. That realtor is Jill Rich. As real estate values change, it's comforting to know that Jill Rich knows Tucson's real estate landscape. She follows the trends. She knows the neighborhoods. She even knows how to help you find financing. But most importantly, Jill cares. It doesn't matter if you're looking for a starter home or a castle. It's like having your bubby in the realty business. For sellers, Jill will develop a personal marketing program that'll sell your house fast. There's no one who knows Tucson real estate better. You can reach Jill Rich at Long Realty's River and Campbell office. Call 349-0174. Jill Rich, providing strong representation in a caring way. Call 349-0174. Is your aging loved one unhappy and having a hard time adjusting to life around them?
The TMC Geropsychiatric Center at Handmaker may be able to help. TMC Geropsych specializes in providing short-term, inpatient services for older adults experiencing behavioral health issues. Did you know that most people with depression get better when they seek help? With the right treatment, those with anxiety can overcome and learn to cope with their fears, and individuals with dementia can continue leading quality lives. Our team, led by a geriatric psychiatrist, brings expertise from disciplines across a variety of specialties to ensure your loved one receives the right diagnosis and treatment. For more information about our services, please call 324-4600. The TMC Geropsychiatric Center at Handmaker. Call 324-4600. Let's talk about how we can help.
We are pleased and serene to welcome back a recurring feature of Too Jewish, Zen Judaism. Practice loving kindness with all other sentient beings. Still, would it kill you to find a sentient being who is Jewish? And what use is profit? Can accumulating money day after day in trade or business truly bring satisfaction? Of course not. For that, one must go shopping. Those were koans of Zen Judaism. We welcome our expert on the international Jewish scene, Tom Price. Good morning, Tom.
Good morning, Rabbi.
We've been talking about wine and kosher wine, and last time we spoke a little bit about Yain Mevushal, the idea that wine had to be boiled, basically pasteurized to a certain level, and if that was the case, then it could be transported and even possibly served by a non-Jew, which isn't true if it's not Yain Mevushal. They're both kosher wines. There's non-boiled kosher wine, but that has to theoretically be handled by an observant Jew, and the other stuff, once it's boiled, doesn't. I don't get it, but that's part of Jewish law. But I do think there's one really funny aspect to this, which is that the general idea, as we talked about last time, is that you're not supposed to have wine that could be used in either literally pagan rituals or Catholic rituals or other kinds of communion-oriented rituals in which the wine theoretically transforms into the blood of Jesus. But the funniest part is many dioceses around America certainly used to serve for their communion wine Mogen David or Manischewitz because it was sweet, tasty, and inexpensive and available everywhere.
Right, on the corner grocery store.
Exactly.
Right. That is funny.
Now, moving from Yain Mevushal or from the boiled wine stuff, let's talk about some of the really great wine regions which now produce some terrific kosher wines, or maybe always did and we just weren't aware of that.
Yeah, and one question that I and probably some of your listeners may have about Yain Mevushal is what about fortified wines that are over a certain percentage of alcohol or over a certain percentage of sweetness, like port, Madeira, et cetera, et cetera? Are those automatically kosher or are they subject to the same restrictions even though they're above a certain percentage and all that? And I think that they are frequently boiled in the process of making them, whereas quote-unquote normal wines are not.
Yeah, I suspect that they would qualify and that they would be okay, but I'm not an Orthodox authority, so you'll have to take my opinion on that one.
Right. These are sort of obscure points of Jewish law, and as we said before, not right. of biblical law, but of Talmudic law.
Right. So, but of course, the standing law is not Talmudic, not biblical law, but Talmudic right. law. That is right. what Jewish law is today.
Right.
And has been for, 1,500 years.
So if we think about the great wine regions of the world, I being an incredible Francophile and having lived in France for 5 or 6 years, think first of France, where vineyards were first planted by the Greeks and then the Romans, and there are certain vineyards that have been under cultivation for way more than 2,000 years. And France, although its Jewish community is shrinking, still produces a huge variety of kosher wines in almost every wine region, not only for the domestic market, not only for the continental market all over Europe, but for the world market, for Israel, for the U.S., whatever. You can find kosher wines from France pretty much anywhere in the world. Probably the next major kosher wine producer in Europe is Italy, which also obviously produces a lot of great wines in many, many different regions, all the way from north to south, from the Alto Adige in the far northeast to Sicily and even Pantelleria, a tiny island to the southwest of Sicily, where they make an incredible dessert wine called Passito. They make it out of raisins. So it's even a question of whether that is wine that's subject to the restrictions of kosher wine or not, because it's basically pressed raisins that have dried on the vine and are harvested like at the end of November, like right before the snows come. So anyway, Italy is another region in Europe. And then to some extent, Spain, Austria, Hungary, they all produce a certain number of wines now that are under rabbinic supervision from the beginning. So apart from the question of who serves them, they are potentially kosher. We'll take a look at the rest of the world next week.
We'll cover it all. Thanks, Tom. We welcome John Ben Asher, the head of School of Tucson Hebrew Academy, the fine Jewish day school here in Tucson, Arizona. Good morning, John.
Good morning. Boker Tov.
Boker Or. I hope you have survived your Thanksgiving overeating.
I think I'm still digesting a little bit, but it's great to be here.
You know, I always feel like Thanksgiving's a Jewish holiday because you invite all of your relatives over, even the ones you don't like, and
right.
You overeat. It must be a Jewish holiday. We have a lot to be grateful for in Jewish education in America, and there are some challenges as well. Let's talk about some of the opportunities.
You bet. You know, running a Jewish community day school is full of challenges and opportunities, and those opportunities are pretty exciting. We have the chance to really reach a broad base of Jewish Tucson, and in a community Jewish day school setting, all families are welcome, affiliated and unaffiliated, families of every type of practice and walk of Jewish life. And so being at a place like Tucson Hebrew Academy encourages participation, engagement, and learning, no matter what your background is, no matter where you're coming from and what your knowledge base is. So it's a great opportunity to take Jewish kids where they are and bring them a step further, or many steps further in their lives as Jews.
Let's explore the difference, because I'm not sure all of our listeners understand the difference between a community day school
sure.
and the other kinds of Jewish day schools that are out there. For example, Orthodox day schools,
right.
Solomon Schechter, conservative day schools, Reform day schools. Let's explore that a little bit.
It's an important question, because there are many different types of Jewish day schools throughout North America. And a community day school is one in which there is no specific affiliation according to a specific branch of Judaism
or stream or something.
Sure.
Right?
There are conservative Jewish day schools. They are yeshivas. But the Tucson Hebrew Academy is an example of a school that isn't that narrowly affiliated. So you'll find all different kinds of Jews at THA.
What's the advantage of having such diversity in a population? It must not always be easy.
It's not easy. In fact, it brings some more complications, because we want to ensure that each family is getting what they would like to get for their child in terms of a Jewish education. The advantage is that we're here for everybody. Tucson is an extremely diverse community, and in many ways we tend to be a small community. And so the day school here reflects that kind of lifestyle and belief and opportunity for who's in town.
One of the advantages is that Reform Jews know how Orthodox Jews do things, and Orthodox Jews know that Reform
sure.
Jews are not non-Jews.
Right.
What are some of the interesting and kind of funny challenges that pop up in the course of that broad range experience of your student body?
Anybody that works with the Jewish people will tell you that you can never make everybody happy all the time. That's probably true of education in general. But one of the things that's awesome about the community school is that everybody's there. And for example, all the rabbis are welcome and come to THA and participate in teaching. So kids from any background will be able to see what it's like in the Reform world, what it's like in the conservative world, what it's like in the Orthodox world. And not only do they rub shoulders and get to know and have friends of all these different types of Jewish life, but they get that learning and an understanding of what the differences are, which in turn enables them to have a better perception of the world of Judaism.
And to understand what a diverse world it really is.
Yep.
John, thanks so much. We'll talk next week.
Thank you.
When we come back on Too Jewish, we'll hear the old Jewish joke of the week.
For 100 years, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery has been known for their compassionate commitment to all the families of our community. Known as the most beautiful final resting place in southern Arizona, Evergreen serves all faiths. Their experience conducting Jewish funerals, Reform, Conservative, and Orthodox is second to none.
From traditional services to the unique, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery offers the best. To speak to a family advisor, call 888-7470, 888-7470.
We welcome John Ben Asher, head of school for Tucson Hebrew Academy. Good morning, John.
Good morning, Rabbi Kohan.
Tell us about THA.
THA is an incredible school, rich community, strong educational culture. We're a K-8 program and Tucson's only Jewish day school.
With small classes, really a tremendous level of individual attention.
Absolutely. Our engaging, talented faculty ensure a rigorous, interactive, supporting learning environment for kids.
And those kids go on to succeed academically. This isn't just about Jewish identity.
THA graduates go on to Tucson's best high schools, and they are exceptionally well prepared.
And I've seen some of them go to Ivy League schools, some of the best colleges in the country too, if that's important for parents, which I believe it is.
That's right. THA really paves the way for students. A rich, strong academic foundation, as well as Jewish knowledge, learning, and culture.
And great community. How can people find out more about putting their kids in THA?
You can come visit or find us online, thaaz.org, and give us a call, 529-3888.
That's 529-3888, or visit www.thaaz.org. The Temple Emmanuel pilgrimage trip to Israel with me, Rabbi Sam Kohan, is coming May 29th to June 9th, 2016. If you're interested in going on this fabulous journey to Israel, seeing it all from Tel Aviv to Haifa to Tzfat to the Sea of Galilee to amazing Jerusalem, please email tojewishradio18@gmail.com, tojewishradio18@gmail, or call 520-327-4501 for more information and an itinerary. It's time now for our old Jewish joke of the week, Jewish humor your Bubby and Zadie knew, brought to you by Too Jewish as a Public Service. Peter, a tourist, is wandering through the Sinai Desert. He gets lost and soon is tired and desperate for water. Just as he's about to give up hope, he sees a tiny oasis in the distance. Relieved, he heads for it. When he gets there, he's astonished to see a sign that says, Moshe's Thai Warehouse. And sitting there under a palm tree is Moshe himself, reading the Jerusalem Post. Next to him is a table with dozens of different kinds of silk ties. Peter begs Moshe for some water, but Moshe says, I'm sorry, I don't have any water, but you want to buy a tie? A tie? Says Peter. What the heck good is a tie in the Sinai Desert? I need water. You can stuff your fancy ties. Moshe says, look, it's no good being rude. You don't want a tie? Don't buy a tie. You're making a mistake, but it's your choice. Peter says, thanks for the advice. Where can I get some water? I'm dying of thirst. And Moshe answers, well, if you walk in that direction about 30 minutes, you'll come to a restaurant. It's owned by my brother Max. There you'll get plenty of food and water. Peter starts walking and soon disappears over the sand dunes. Moshe goes back to reading his newspaper. An hour later, Peter crawls up to Moshe's Thai warehouse on his hands and knees. He's now extremely desperate for water, practically on his last breath. Moshe asks, so what happened? Didn't you find Max's restaurant? Oh, I found the restaurant all right, gasps Peter. But Max wouldn't let me in without a tie. That was the old Jewish joke of the week, special feature of Too Jewish just for you. You should live and be well. And now a word of Torah. This week we read the portion of Vayeshev, which begins the story of Joseph, one of the great narratives in all literature. We'll continue with this fateful tale through the rest of the book of Genesis, and the extraordinary plot lines involving Joseph eventually set up the rest of early Jewish history. But first, Vayeshev starts by further illustrating the exploits, good and mostly bad, of one of the truly spectacularly dysfunctional families in all of history, that of the great patriarch Jacob, his four wives and 13 children. If you thought the Borgia family had problems, if you believe that Oedipus had a bad home life, if you feel the Kennedys were cursed, if you think the Kardashians, never mind about the Kardashians, but for the others, none of these epic familial failures have anything on Jacob and his brood. In fact, you can make a case that the Jacob clan has some of the troubles of each. In addition to the vigorous rivalry between the varsity wives, Leah and Rachel, until she dies giving birth to the 12th brother, Benjamin, the built-in rivalries between the JV wives, Bilhah and Zilpah, the phenomenal sibling rivalries that take place among all the 12 vigorous, manipulative brothers, all abetted by truly lousy parenting by the patriarch Jacob, there's plenty of bad, fateful luck to mix in, too. There are betrayals galore, rape, revenge killing, incest, mass circumcision, mass slaughter, massive deception, conspiracy to defraud, and of course, selling a blood relative into slavery in another country. Frankly, this is not conduct we prefer to see in our own families. But with all of the action of every kind in Vayeshev, there's also a moment of pure fate, an incident that illustrates that something greater than mere human weakness is at work. Early in this week's Parsha, Joseph is sent by his father to spy on his own brothers. Jacob suspects that the boys, young men by now, have been taking care of dad's sheep, but selling a few on the side to make some extra shekels. While searching for his brothers, Joseph gets lost, wanders helplessly until, we're told, he bumps into a stranger who sends him to find his brothers. When he arrives, he sets in motion events that land him in slavery and prison in Egypt, eventually lead the whole family going down to Egypt, being enslaved, and a few centuries later getting freed, crossing the Red Sea, and getting the Torah. And while the world has never been quite the same since. But none of this would have happened if Joseph hadn't wandered into a friendly, anonymous stranger who helped him out. That is, all the turbulence, energy, and activity of Jacob's family wouldn't really have mattered if not for a nameless stranger who sets our story onto its true course, one that will eventually end in peoplehood and a great posterity. First, one simple, nameless guy had to point the way. The moral of this complicated story? You never know just what your own small act might do for somebody else, or how or when it might affect history. So, in this coming holiday season, why not take a moment and do something for somebody else, even someone you don't know? You too might make the world a better place and shape a bright future. No matter how well adjusted your own family is. When we return in a moment here on Too Jewish, our guest, Rabbi Rami Shapiro, author, speaker, and teacher, will explore Kabbalah, the always intriguing and often popular form of Jewish mystical expression, and explain why he has published a new book of his own poetry. Hear some of it when we come back in a moment on Too Jewish.
Hi, Doris. How are you?
Well, Carol, to be honest, now that I'm a little older, I can't get out as much as I'd like. I miss seeing people.
Why don't you come over to my place for lunch on us? The food's delicious. So many choices. And I have a special table with my friends every day. They'd love to have you join us.
Is there much to do there?
There are lots of activities every day. Mondays is Mahjong. Tuesdays I do yoga. Wednesdays we go shopping or to the museum or a restaurant. Thursdays my exercise class. There are book groups, speakers, Shabbos services, concerts, a game room. I'm busier than ever.
Where do you live?
I'm at Handmaker. And the people are great. Please come over for lunch. You'll love it. It's even kosher. Just call me at 322-7035.
Handmaker Jewish Services for the Aging offers the full spectrum of quality senior living and post-hospital rehabilitative care. Call 322-7035. Handmaker for life. 322-7035.
Are you or a loved one facing a terminal illness? Casa de la Luz Hospice offers patients and loved ones the support necessary to face the final months of life. Paid for by Medicare and most private insurances, hospice team members provide medical, emotional, and spiritual care in the security and comfort of the patient's home. Casa de la Luz has been a leading provider of hospice care in Tucson since 1998, and today serves more patients in Pima County than any other local hospice provider. The mission of Casa de la Luz Hospice is to provide superior care to patients and their loved ones so that they may complete their mission on this earth in comfort, dignity, and harmony. Call 544-9890 to learn more about how Casa de la Luz Hospice can help you. That's 544-9890. Casa de la Luz Hospice, because every day counts.
We continue with our Two Jewish Update on news of Jews around the world with commentary.
U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry said he was in Israel this week to talk about how to restore calm. I'm here to talk with the Prime Minister about the ways that we can work together, all of us, the international community, to push back against terrorism, to push back against senseless violence, to find a way forward, to restore calm and begin to provide the opportunities that most reasonable people in every part of the world are seeking for themselves and their families, Kerry said in Jerusalem at the start of his meetings with Bibi Netanyahu. Kerry condemned the recent rash of attacks against Israelis. Clearly, no people anywhere should live with daily violence, with attacks in the streets, with knives or scissors or cars. And it's very clear to us that these acts of terrorism, which have been taking place, deserve the condemnation that they are receiving. Today, I expressed my complete condemnation for any act of terror that takes innocent lives and disrupts the day-to-day life of a nation, Kerry said. He also reaffirmed Israel's need to defend itself. Israel has an obligation to defend itself, and it will, and it is, he said. You know, there's no great sense in the region that Kerry's visit will make much of an impact. While he was in Israel, in fact, Turkey shot down a Russian warplane that strayed into its airspace. Never a dull moment in the Middle East. In Foxborough, Massachusetts, the New England Patriots held a moment of silence in honor of slain American yeshiva student Ezra Schwartz prior to their Monday night football game against the Buffalo Bills last week. The Patriots, by the way, won. Schwartz, who was 18 years old, a resident of suburban Boston, was killed in a Palestinian terror attack in the West Bank last week. He was buried a week ago today in his hometown of Sharon, Massachusetts. At his funeral, stories told by family members and his Maimonides School baseball coach recalled Schwartz as a loyal Patriots fan who proudly wore the team's jerseys and caps. Gillette Stadium, home of the Patriots, is located in Foxborough, the town that borders Sharon. Schwartz followed the team even while studying in Israel, according to his father, Ari, who said the family watched the games together over the internet. During one recent game, the teen lost his connection, but one of his younger brothers held up his phone to the televised game so they could keep watching by video call. Football kept us connected and we loved it together, Ari Schwartz said. Robert Kraft, the Jewish philanthropist, owns the Patriots, the defending Super Bowl champions and undefeated. Rutgers University also lowered its flag to half-staff in recognition of the death of Ezra Schwartz, who was supposed to start business school at the New Jersey University in the fall, and of Anita Datar, an aid worker and 1995 Rutgers College graduate, who was among the 21 people murdered last week by terrorists in Mali. And in much lighter news, four elderly Jewish women playing Mahjong in Florida may not sound like a crime, but that's what was recently alleged in the city of Altamont Springs. Lee Delnick, Bernice Diamond, Helen Greenspan, and Zelda King, aged 87 to 95 years old, had their weekly game of Mahjong interrupted by police, who stopped them from playing in their usual spot, the Escondido Condominium Clubhouse, on suspicion that the group was illegally gambling. One of them later said that a troublemaker in the building alerted authorities to their weekly game. As it turns out, there is no ordinance in Altamont Springs against Mahjong gambling. Florida's laws allow certain penny-ante games or games through which a winner wins $10 or less. The Bubby's Mahjong game, which caps the winner's earning at a steep $4, falls within the confines of the law. And so the ladies are now back at it, playing Mahjong for pennies, a time-honored Jewish women's practice. Sometimes justice triumphs. And that's the Two Jewish News of Jews around the world. We are delighted to welcome back to Two Jewish our guest this morning. Rabbi Rami Shapiro is one of the most interesting rabbis around and has been for a while now. He is the author of more than 30 books, including a new book of poetry, which is really a beautiful book called Accidental Grace. He is best known for his writings on Kabbalah and mysticism and the individual experience of mysticism, as well as speaking about it all around the country. Rami, your story is worth retelling. Although you're an HUC-trained rabbi, can you talk a little bit about how you got there and how you got into mysticism?
Well, I grew up in an Orthodox home, modern Orthodox home, and found it absolutely empty of any kind of spirituality. Whatever I was seeking when I was in my early teens, I wasn't getting it from my rabbi or my synagogue. And I stumbled on a book called Zen Comes West by Christmas Humphreys. And I learned how to meditate from the book, and which is not the way to learn, but I did. No. And I had this experience when I was 16 years old doing this, as I thought it was anyway, Zen meditation. And I don't know what the experience was, because in that kind of state, the ego isn't there to observe it. So when I came back, however, whenever it passed, which is probably, 1/100th of a second, but when the moment passed and I came back into my normal waking state consciousness, I had this experience of being absolutely interconnected with the entirety of the universe, and was filled with a sense of awe, wonder, and joy. I mean, I was laughing. It was just an incredibly powerful, it's what Reb Nachman calls the rishimu, the fragrance that's left after the perfume has evaporated. And so the experience was gone, but the perfume that remained was so compelling that I could never shake the idea. I mean, it was, everything is one. It's all God, and that's, my language. And I thought Zen was the way to have that experience again, to really dwell in that experience. And spent 10 years in serious, or I would consider as seriously as I do anything, serious Zen study. But my Zen master, Suzaki Roshi, at one point as I was graduating college, I was on a retreat with him, a Sesshin Zen intensive retreat, and he backed me against the wall, and he said, what are your plans? And I told him I was going to grad school for Buddhist studies, and he was totally offended. He thought that was a waste of my time, and he said, that's not the way to learn Buddhism. The way to learn Buddhism is to become a Buddhist and go to a monastery and, move in, with at his center on Mount Baldy outside of Los Angeles. And I definitely didn't want to do that. And, I literally was backed against the wall, and he was right up in my face. And I said, oh, Roshi, I can't do that. I'm going to become a rabbi. And then he said, to be a rabbi, be a Zen rabbi. So I said, okay, I'll be a Zen rabbi. Just get off my case. And so then I went to university and found that the academic study of Judaism was really boring, and decided that I would get a better education and a more spiritually fulfilling one if I went to rabbinical school. And while not everyone will say this, I did. HUC. I loved every minute of the 5 years. I was blessed with amazing teachers, and the spiritual work I was doing, I don't necessarily call it mystical, but the spiritual work I was doing was absolutely enriched by the text study and the history and the other things that HUC brought to me. And while they didn't focus on spirituality in particular, and that's a mistake, I think, on their part, though I have no idea what they do now, but they didn't then. But I was still involved with meditation, with Zen, with a lot of other things. So I kept up, both. And then found through Reb Zalman Schachter Shalomi, really, that there's a equally deep mystical, spiritual tradition in Judaism as there is in, Zen or Vedanta or anything else that I've become involved in. And that was really what helped me stay Jewish, because I'm always looking for that deep mystical or spiritual experience that, to really feel the presence of God, the Shekhinah, within and around me, and ultimately as me. And he showed me not only that it was there, but how to do it and how to live that way, live with that.
I heard you once say at my congregation when you spoke, that when somebody said, well, where do you go after you die? And you said, well, you don't go anywhere. You're all sort of part of this space-time continuum. It's just whether you're kind of coming out one direction or coming out another. Did anybody teach you that? Did you figure that out yourself? I've always wanted to ask you that question.
I'm sure I've read it in a book.
Or written it in a book, perhaps.
Yeah, well, I've written in a book, but before I wrote it, I'm sure I read it somewhere. But my meditation experience, everything I do comes out of really that contemplative work that I do. It influences all my readings of Torah, all my translations of the Hebrew texts, and everything I teach. So my experience suggests, I don't know how strong to make it, but my experience suggests that in fact is the case. There isn't anywhere to go because you're it. You know, in the Hindu tradition, you know, we say tat tvam asi, thou art that. So we are already, where does the wave go when the ocean is no longer waving it? It just goes back into the ocean, which it in its essence always was. So I believe that you and I and everything, every being, not just humans, but all existence, is a manifestation of the divine. And the difference between being alive and dead is that when I'm alive, I have a sense of being separate from it. When I'm dead, I don't think we have that separation anymore. We're just it. So, yeah, I don't think we go anywhere.
Your book of poetry begins with psalms. It continues with liturgy, your own version. I don't want to say your own take. It's your own approach to them. And then some of your own personal prayers and expressions. So this is a brutal question to ask an author. What do you like best?
In that book?
Yes.
Oh, yeah, there's things. I tell you what other people like best, and I can't quote it, but it's, you know, the unending love.
Love. Your version of Ahava Rabbah or Ahava Tolam.
Yeah, we are loved by an unending love. And that's what, I liked it when I wrote it, but it's so ubiquitous. It's like, oh, really? Give me a break. Not again. I've written something else besides that.
But I always wonder if, like, you know, somewhere Lincoln's spirit is hovering and saying, the Gettysburg Address? Really? That's all you remember?
That's it.
It was like 2 minutes. It wasn't. Yeah.
Right. I wrote it in the back of an envelope.
Right. I want to thank Rami Shapiro for a great visit here on Too Jewish. His book, which I highly recommend, and it won't take you long, but you'll reread it a lot, is called Accidental Grace, Psalms, Poems, and Prayers. People can find it where everyone finds everything now. Amazon, which has become Sinai and is available everywhere on every device. It's a great book, Accidental Grace. Rami, thanks so much. Where else can people go to find out more about your work and your many books?
Well, they can go to my website, rabbirami.com. They can, you know, we all have our podcast radio shows now. I have a weekly podcast sponsored by Spirituality and Health magazine. It's a 20-minute interview with people who make their way into the magazine. And that you can subscribe to that at spiritualityhealth.com.
Thanks so much, Rami.
Hey, Sam, it was a pleasure.
When we come back on Too Jewish, we'll hear about next week's guest get a final musical play out.
For 100 years, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery has been known for their compassionate commitment to all the families of our community. Known as the most beautiful final resting place in southern Arizona, Evergreen serves all faiths. Their experience conducting Jewish funerals, Reform, Conservative, and Orthodox is second to none. From traditional services to the unique, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery offers the best. To speak to a family advisor, call 888-7470, 888-7470.
Thanks for being here with us this morning on Too Jewish with me, Rabbi Sam Kohan. Join us next Sunday at 9 a.m. Our guest will be the delightful Michelle Citron, Jewish singer, songwriter, and an engaging and entertaining personality, too. Our play at this morning on Too Jewish for the coming holiday of Hanukkah comes from our guest for next week. It's Michelle Citron's Hanukkah tune, Hanukkah Lovin'. Only 7 more shopping days until Hanukkah starts next Sunday night. My friends, may you have a Shavuot Tov, a wonderful conclusion to your weekend of Thanksgiving gratitude to God, a good week, and a week, we pray, of peace.
A little Hanukkah loving is what I need tonight. Light a menorah and the moment is right.